It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. We have an incredible show for you today. On the journey of giving back each week, I look around and say, who's making a difference in the world? Who's making it better? Who's changing the dynamic, the landscape? And this week, I have the great honor of Rabbi Shalom Lubit and his daughter, Rivka. These folks have been doing incredible work at the Chabad of Southeast Morris County. They just had their 20-year anniversary, and I met the rabbi and his daughter last year, and these are wonderful people. These folks have inspired me. They've given out over 20,000 Thanksgiving dinners. They do so many wonderful things in the community. They bring the community together. They're a light onto the nations. These are wonderful people. So it's a great honor today to have them on. Before we really start the show, though, my little guy, Jonathan, it's his 7-year birthday today. So happy birthday, Jonathan. Rabbi, good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
No, so nice to see you.
Pleasure to be here.
Good morning.
So nice to see you guys. And I know you had services this morning, and thank you for running over here to come on the show, The Journey of Giving Back.
My pleasure.
So, you know, Rabbi and Rivka, you know, each week I really try to bring people on that make the world better. And it's so humbling to have you both on today on Sunday morning. So, Rabbi, for the listeners that are not really familiar with you, because I know you have a lot of people that know who you are, but for some of the folks, they don't know who you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I grew up in Chicago. My dad's actually from Newark, so he grew up here in New Jersey. My grandparents lived in New Jersey. Great-grandparents lived in New Jersey. I grew up in Chicago, and first experience really with New Jersey was when I came to school here. I went to the Rabbinical College in Morristown, right on Sussex Avenue, 25 years ago or so, and got involved with the local community then, traveled around the world a little bit. We could talk about that later, and settled down here in 2002, so 20 years. I live in Parsippany. I run the Chabad of Southeast Morris County, which is based in Madison, serving, you know, this part of Morris County, and life is great.
Well, God bless you. And Rivka, for the listeners as well, how old are you?
Hi, I'm 19.
Oh, God bless you. Yeah. You know, I met you last year at this beautiful banquet, and I was so struck, Rivka, by your poise and your ability just to talk and be so real. Are you in college now?
I'm studying in Brooklyn.
Oh, good for you. Wonderful, wonderful. So, Rabbi, I'm always intrigued on the path of everybody goes through in their life, because on the journey of giving back, we're all on the journey, one way or another, we're going through life trying to make the world better. Why did you decide to become a rabbi?
Well, nothing else really worked out for me. No, I'm kidding. Why did I decide to become a rabbi? I really, growing up, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I mean, I was living an observantly Jewish lifestyle. I'm happy to do that. I love that. But I didn't know what I wanted to do for a living while I was actually in New Jersey. And as I got involved with the local community and started touching people's lives and learning about people and spending time with people and figuring out how to help people, I realized that I really like that. I like people, and I like making a difference, and I thought that being a rabbi would give me a great opportunity to touch people's lives every day and really impact them in a positive way. I had a great uncle who said, go become a lawyer. You'll make a lot more money. And I said, at the end of the day, it's not about making money. It's about making a difference in people's lives, and I'm thrilled with the choice I made, and I love it.
So did you have anybody else in your family that had been a rabbi in the past?
Not since Moses, maybe, but it was a long way since anyone was a rabbi. But, you know, it's interesting. My dad, who's a professor, he's a mathematician, lives in Chicago. He used to go to this, he still goes to this little synagogue. Long story short, he lived in the old side of town, and there was a little synagogue that was dying, and he was the last one there to kind of take care of it. And they moved into a nursing home, and he used to take us when we were little. We used to walk with him 3 miles each Saturday to run services in this nursing home in a little synagogue that they made there for the people. And looking back years later, I think that's what really inspired me to kind of get into this line of work. But yeah, I'm the first rabbi in the family.
Yeah, no, just curious.
Very long.
A lot of families, you know, it's like a tradition. Like I'm a trial lawyer. My late dad was a trial lawyer, and I just followed in his footsteps. And I was just curious about
it. The one thing I knew I didn't want to be a mathematician. That I knew.
That's not as impressive. I'll be honest, a mathematician.
I was like, that's not for me.
Yeah.
But no, I had to chart out a path for myself, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity I've been given.
So Rivka, your whole life, your dad's been a rabbi. So what is that like growing up with your dad, the rabbi? Everybody knows your dad in the community.
It's amazing. It's the best thing.
You know, and getting ready for the show, too, I thought you had 8 kids, Rabbi. You have 9 kids.
Nine,
God bless
correct.
You. You know, so I was telling my office, I'm bringing the rabbi and his daughter, Rivka. And, like, you got to ask the rabbi about 9 kids. Because that's a lot, I have to say. God bless you. But
yeah, 9, you got my own baseball team.
So
first of all, yes, we have nine children. My wife is amazing. She's wonderful. It was our anniversary yesterday, 22 years. So
happy anniversary.
Life is good. Life is great. And, you know, children are a blessing. The Bible, first commandment given to mankind, the beginning of Genesis, it'd be fruitful and multiply. But when you talk about giving, there's no greater opportunity in life to give than to one's own family. And the larger the family, the more opportunity there is to give and to share and to love and to build a beautiful life together. It's not always the easiest thing in the world. You know, my oldest is 21 and my youngest is almost 2, so quite the range. But children are a gift and children are a blessing. You know, as a rabbi, I wish people in today's society appreciated the value of larger families. And it's a tremendous gift. There's cousins all over the place, and it's really wonderful.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, like you said, I'm just really impressed and happy.
So Rivka is number 2. She's 2 out of 9.
2 out of 9. You're number 2. So we'll take her number 1 today. We got her on the show. Rivka, what's it like? So, you know, you're growing up, you know, in a family. Your dad is an amazing guy. Your mom, Aharona, right, is also very, very involved in your life. And what is it like as you're growing up and, you know, your dad's a rabbi? And does it change kind of like how your peer group kind of interacts with you?
Well, I was blessed to go to a school where all our dads were kind of all in the same line of work, all kind of rabbis. And we all just grew up with, you know, serving the community, and it was just part of our lives.
That's cool.
When you're in a synagogue and your father's the rabbi, it does put a little pressure on you.
That's what I was trying to build to there, Rabbi.
If the kids misbehave, they're just kids misbehaving. But when the rabbi's kids misbehave, it's the rabbi's kids misbehave.
That's really cool. No, I understand. So, you know, Rabbi, I understand you had this really important and beautiful, you know, anniversary, 20 years of the Chabad of Southeast Morris County. So I want to go back in time on the journey, okay? Because, you know, life is always kind of curious which way you go in life. Sometimes you think you know where you're going and you turn out. You're going in the wrong direction, but you're going. Whatever it is, you're moving, right? So tell the listeners about the Chabad of Southeast Morris County. When did you start it?
So we officially opened our doors in the fall of 2002, but it really started a few years earlier. I got involved with the community in Madison in the late 90s, mid-90s, when I was a rabbinical student. And based on that, when I was studying for rabbinic ordination in Morristown at the college, so I wanted to put up a public menorah in Madison. Now, that's standard behavior for Chabad rabbis around the world. Chabad is a worldwide Jewish organization, 4,000 branches, focused on Jewish unity, finding common ground between people of the Jewish faith and really all walks of life. And there was no Chabad center in this part of Morris County. I knew some people in Madison. I'd go on Fridays and visit them and, you know, try to inspire them a little, learn from them as a rabbinical student. One of the cool things the Chabad movement does is it takes young aspiring rabbinical students and it throws them on the street and says, you know, go out and find some people and engage with them and learn very quickly that some people are interested in your message and some people are not, and kind of learn learn by experience how to make it work. So I knew some people in town. I said, you know what? There's a menorah in Trenton in front of the State House. There's public menorahs in front of the White House. And, you know, many of the towns in New Jersey, this is 25 years ago. So I'd love to have one in Madison. So I kind of started that process. I called the mayor from a payphone in the college, and we got it up. And the first year, there were 20 people that came to the lighting. And the second year, there were 50. And the third year, there were 150. And at some point, I was like, hold on a second. There may be an opportunity to open up a real live, you know, community center. And that's what happened. So that's Chabad. We opened 20 years ago. We weren't sure exactly where things would go, but things have grown quickly. We do kids programs, teen programs, adult programs, senior programs, a lot of life cycle events. And along the way, we've realized that impacting people that are isolated and lonely is really something we're good at, and it's really an underserved population, and that's really where we focus a lot of our time, a lot of our energy. I also ended up starting a legal symposium for attorneys and judges that our friend Billy goes to, and gets 800 people coming every year, and just some interesting stuff along the way. So but Chabad 20 years later is a thriving organization. We're excited. We have a major pledge towards a building. We just need to find the space. So if any realtors out there want to help us.
I know a lot of realtors too, Rabbi. You know, you mentioned Billy Laufer, who I brought on last Father's Day, is an incredible friend, and he's just a wonderful person. And that's also the mystery of life, is where you meet someone and you get to know someone, and then all of a sudden I get to meet you lovely people. And that's part of why it's important to meet people. I got to digress. When I was working on Washington Street with my late dad and my brother, the rabbinical college, you know, there were folks coming to our building to Laceville and, you know, talk about the religion, and it was a really beautiful experience. But I do remember they would just basically ring the doorbell. We're like, who are these people, you know? But it was a great experience. Rivka, so you grew up, you're so involved too with the Chabad. What's your like earliest memory of being involved in the Chabad?
Earliest memory.
Yeah. Is there anything that stands out? Like, just like, wow, like you just thought about it?
I mean, I remember going to like to the classes, going to the nursing home. Going to the nursing home is something I grew up doing, walking the halls. You know, the old woman and men, they were our friends. We used to go visit them, play with them, look forward to spending time with them. And that was part of my childhood. I remember just walking those nursing home hallways.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because this is also, I think, an incredible legacy that your dad and you're following, too, is to give back and help others. And your dad, the rabbi, touched on people being lonely. So you were going into nursing homes. And why were you going into nursing homes?
We would have Friday, we would have a service for in honor of Shabbat, and all the Jewish residents would come. And we would just try to brighten their weeks and bring them the joy of Judaism, and just remind them that they're not alone. We're part of something bigger.
Right. So what would happen is we'd have at the service, we'd have a big challah bread and we'd slice it up. And then whoever came to the service would get a piece. But then we would take the rest of them to the residents that either wouldn't come or were too sick to get out of bed. So that's when we spent a lot of time walking up and down the halls. And, you know, nursing homes don't have kids. Once in a while, someone brings a pet and people get all excited, but there's no babies in nursing homes.
Rabbi,
you have young children, you bring them there, it's people get so excited and start crying.
You know what's striking exactly is how lonely people are, and just a kind gesture. I love kindness. You know, I think it's the greatest thing in life to be kind and generous with your time and your skills and your gifts. But your Chabad goes into nursing homes. These people are lonely. They have no one visiting. They're by themselves. Right? They don't have hope. You need hope in life. And what was that like, Rabbi, you and your daughter and your family and you know, folks at Chabad? What's it like inside when you go into the nursing home and you see the look on the faces of those residents?
So one of the things you learn in life is that it's not what you say. It's what you do. And these people, they just showing up. It's not what you say to uplift them that's as important. It's just willing to listen to them. You know, so many people in nursing homes, some of them are temporarily subacute. They broke their hip. They're in rehab. And they're going through a rough time. And, you know, it's a little scary. You know, you're living your life. And next thing you know, you're in a rehab place. And other people move in more on a long-term basis. We've gone through, you know, assisted living. And then, you know, they're wonderful places for people that can't be alone. But it can be very isolating. It could be very, very lonely. And just to spend a few minutes visiting, just, you know, my daughters, when they were 10 months old, would learn how to blow kisses. And you blow a kiss to a lady sitting in a wheelchair. And of any faith, they just, they melt. They melt. They love it. They love it.
I think that's an incredible thing.
I encourage anyone to, if you have children, like take them to these places. You can't do it enough. It's not.
Exactly.
It's not hard.
Right. Exactly. Well, how hard? You basically get in your car.
Just say hello. But bring them a flower and say, hey, we're just thinking about you. You know, it's easy. It's easy, but it has a profound impact on children. It has a profound impact on the residents. It's really, really important.
It's the gift of giving, right? You know, sharing, giving, caring. I know that was the
title. It's attention. It's giving attention. It's giving love. You're not really giving them anything. All they need is some human interaction, some human contact.
Right. You know, I read, you know, being there for the forgotten, light and hope. Rivka, what does that mean to you when you know, you're going there, wherever you're reaching out to folks? What's it like to be a light, to give people hope?
You know, what's special about light is that the more light just spreads. And, you know, when you light a candle, one candle, two candles, it continues giving and it continues. And, you know, you don't lose anything from giving. The flame doesn't become smaller. The flame grows. So you never lose by giving. And it's just so simple to just go out there to be the lamplighter, to just light up the lamps.
And you've been lighting a lot of lights and a lot of love and hope for people. And sounds like you've been doing this your whole life, Rivka, since you can remember. I mean, that's incredible.
Thank God.
Yeah, that is a blessing, though, once again. Rabbi, what's it make you feel like? Because I love the dichotomy. My friends are like, you always bring on, if you can, you know, the families. I say, because I love the idea of the legacy of not just saying, but doing. But what's it like as a dad of a rabbi, of course, but like a father, your father, 9 kids, God bless you. But like when you hear Rivka talk about that and your other children and the Chabad, what's it like inside?
It's a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful feeling of validation. At the end of the day, I think most parents hope that our values are transmitted to our children, not as our values, but as their own values. I tell parents all the time that come to me struggling with children who are, you know, choosing paths that are radically different than their own, that ultimately you can't expect children to live their lives based on your values. But if you do things right and you educate them properly and you live an experiential life, your values become your children's values. And when your children embrace your values as their own, that's very fulfilling and very, very validating. I mean, I'm sure at a certain point you became a trial lawyer in your own skin. And that's, it wasn't just, well, my dad's doing it, so I want to do it too. And I was like, I really want to do that. And I'm sure that brought your dad a lot of joy as well. It's your journey. It's no longer you following him, you know, and that's the greatest legacy when generation after generation, you know, from the faith perspective, from the Jewish people perspective, you know, our history goes back over 3,000 years. And that's only because parents educated their children and embraced values that were passed generations to generation. So it's very fulfilling.
I mean, the legacy, and I was so blessed with my late dad. We worked, you know, together, and he was my hero. So for me, when I saw my dad, you know, when we would go to court together, I lit up because I knew my dad was proud. And it made me feel, like, that's, you know, right, beyond validated. Just it was just a beautiful moment.
There's a Hebrew word, nachas. Nachas means the parents having joy and fulfillment in their children's accomplishments. And it's very powerful.
No, it's an incredible thing to have that also. But also, you know, one of the things, Rivka, what do you think about when you're doing good deeds? How does it make you feel?
Good. It feels good to be a part of something bigger, to just continue to spread goodness and kindness and to share that with other people.
I think we got to
move up
slightly
a little bit.
There we go. Sorry about that. MK the engineer was like, oh my God, gotta make sure we get Rivka's voice there. Plus I could see the rabbi a little better now too. I was bopping and weaving.
There you go.
But you know, once again, like when you do good works and good deeds, when you go to bed at night, what's that feeling like, Rivka, when you know you've served God, you've done the right thing? What's it feel like inside?
It feels like I'm doing the right thing. And feel accomplished, and yet we know that we have more to do, and we're going to keep on doing, and day by day, just adding more and more.
Yeah. So, I mean, once again, I always put the spotlight on people trying to make the world better, lifting up the community. And it's also one person. You could touch one person's life and then you could change their entire trajectory. What do you think about that, Rabbi? But just reaching out to one person, what impact do you think that could have on folks?
So the Talmud, the Jewish Book of Wisdom, says one who saves a life saves an entire world. And every person really is an entire world. And we live in a world today that really we spend so much time on our devices, by ourselves, in our own little corners, not engaging with other people. You save one life, you touch one life, it's contagious, it spreads. And, you know, unfortunately, we saw the consequences of viruses spreading over the last couple of years. We learned a lot about transmission of negativity. But if you take that model and you put it in a positive space, the idea of touching one person and impacting them in a positive way and then them having spread the good and the hope to others. It's as simple as a smile. Like, this isn't really complicated stuff. You walk down the street, you smile, say good morning to someone. Like, it makes their day. Smiling is contagious. You smile at someone, they smile back. They say a story. There was someone before the Day of Atonement back in Europe, and he was kind of down and very serious, and, you know, a rabbi walked down the street and said, why are you so serious? You know, why are you frowning? He says, well, I'm atoning. He said, well, just because you're atoning, everyone else has to suffer? Like, why do they have to suffer? Smile, and you bring good energy to other people, and you never know how that energy ends up impacting others and how it could eventually come back and help you in ways you never anticipated.
You know, it's interesting about the energy people give off, too. What do you think about that, Rifkin? You ever meet, hopefully you feel good about me, but you ever just meet someone and it's like you have a good vibe or like, oh, my God, I got to go the other way. You know, do you ever have that? Like, you know, you could kind of feel like, you know, the energy someone's giving off.
Yeah, but if you aren't, you know, if it's not the right energy, you can very quickly and easily influence that and change it. By you being in a good mood, that smile just spreads. So even if in the beginning it was not the best interaction, you just, you know, you smile at them. You can influence your surroundings in the simple way. You don't have to, you know, if you find yourself always having those negative encounters, maybe like you can look at yourself and say, wait a second, you know, what am I doing to make it better? And how can I make it better? Just smile and, you know, it'll work. You'll have good encounters.
You have a very nice smile, Rifkin. You light up the room. And that's also about, you know, the goodness that people do have inside, but they also have to share it, right? You have to share your gifts. Rabbi, what are your thoughts about that with folks? Because you come in contact with so many remarkable, wonderful people. You know, you had sent me the clip of your recent beautiful 20-year anniversary, and I saw some of the folks being honored. And I was like, you know, these are a wonderful bunch of people. What's it like, you know, having that opportunity to interact with such wonderful people?
So, you know, it's great. One of the beautiful things I didn't even mention, you know, the Chabad world that I run, the organization I run is non-for-profit. I joke sometimes that it's very non-for-profit. And we raise funds to do the work we do and keep our doors open and help people in need and for the staff that we have that are in the community doing the work we do. And, you know, when you're in the fundraising space, it's a tremendous opportunity to meet a lot of people, some which are, you know, philanthropically inclined, some which don't know anything about giving, and some which are somewhere in between. But when you meet people, develop relationships with people, there are a lot of good people in this world. There are a lot of people in this world that understand the value of giving, even if they're not engaged on a daily basis. They understand the value of being supportive of charitable causes. There are so many good causes. I'm sure you highlight a lot of them in our community that people can write checks to and be supportive of, even just in a minimal way. And there are a lot of people that really understand, you know, in Hebrew, the word charity is tzedakah. And tzedakah comes from the word tzedek, which means justice. We don't view charity from the Jewish perspective as just a kindness that we choose to do. Charity is justice. It's an obligation. Like, God gives us, so we give to others. The concept of tithing is really a Jewish concept. Like, God gives you a little extra to say, pass that along to the people I need to help, and they'll be helped through you giving them what they're meant to have. So people that get it, that understand, that don't want the thank yous, that, listen, I believe in what you're doing. I like the cause. I'm doing it because I think it's important. You don't need to, you know, give me honor. Those are the most honorable people.
No doubt about it. And Rabbi, if some folks want to reach out, either donate or speak to you, you're wonderful, you know, how do they do that, Rabbi?
They can call me, 973-896-6577. Our website is Chabad Cares. That's CHABADCARES.com. And we're accessible. If you want to volunteer, we have a lot of volunteer opportunities. We have all sorts of opportunities to help people give. We have classes, we have lectures, we have all sorts of stuff. We try to bring fulfillment in people's lives, and fulfillment really is not with what we get, but it's by what we give. So that's what we do.
So, Rivka, you know, I bring on a lot of different folks in the community, and it's such a great honor because I can actually bring wonderful people on to put the spotlight on what they're doing. And the rabbi just touched on it. There are so many wonderful giving people out there, and too often people focus on the negative instead of the positive. And that's one of the missions of my show, is there's so many wonderful things. Let's not always focus on the horrible things. Let's talk about the good stuff in the world, because there's so many wonderful people out there. What's your perspective, Rivka, you know, when you've been involved now for pretty much your entire life? Yeah. You know, and you're around such good people. What are your thoughts about people? Instead of focusing on the negative, how about the positive? What are your thoughts?
I think it's the right thing to do. It's a good thing to do. And I think it just spreads, you know, just focusing on that good and being that light, it just spreads.
You know, I also read that light can dispel darkness. What are your thoughts about that, Rivka?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, you go into a dark room and you bring a candle and the whole room lights up. Darkness is not an entity of itself. Darkness is the absence of light. And so by you being that light, you can light up the darkness. Darkness is not something which you can fight. Darkness is something which each one of us have to, in order to dispel, in order to fight it. You don't fight it by the way you may think, by war, you know. You fight it by being that light, by doing that goodness, and really by each one of us realizing that we are a flame. And that by us being that light and shining our light will dispel the darkness, will bring so much light into the whole world.
Well, that's a beautiful thing to say. Rabbi, you know, I pray. I do my own thing, though, candidly. Everybody, you know, observes God differently, whatever it might be. What are your thoughts about the power of prayer?
Prayer is very important. Prayer is a dialogue. It's a conversation, first of all, with a being that's greater than ourselves. You know, we like to spend a lot of time in our own little space thinking about how wonderful we are. But all of us have needs. And when I say needs, it's not just like, God, please give me a new phone and God grant me a lot of money and a lot of vacation house and all that kind of stuff. We have a need to express gratitude. And I think that's a very underserved concept in our world today. I think many of us don't realize how blessed we are, how fortunate we are, how successful we are in so many ways. And prayer, you know, if you open up a traditional prayer book of probably of almost any faith, part of prayer is asking God for our material needs, but a larger part is praising God and thanking God for the blessings in our life. When we wake up in the morning blessings that we have, thank you, God, for giving me strength. Thank you, God, for giving me health. Thank you, God, for letting me get up in the morning. Thank you, God, for giving me a body that functions. We take so much for granted in this world. And when we start our day expressing gratitude to God for the blessings that we have, and then we throw in, by the way, you know, a couple things I could use a little help with, but it opens up a connection that we are not, you know, we're not God. I don't know where the camera is, and if I presume my yarmulke is pretty... presume my yarmulke is pretty visible. One of the reasons in the Jewish tradition we wear a yarmulke, a head covering, is to show that there's something above us. My entire body is underneath my yarmulke, which means there's something above the yarmulke.
Do you ever leave the house without it on?
No,
I'm just curious. No, by accident. Let's say you're right now.
By accident. You ever leave the house without your pants on by accident?
I forgot my blazer. I'm just curious. I don't know.
I wear it to sleep.
Oh, you have it? Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Somebody. I mean, you're swimming. You don't wear it when you go swimming. But otherwise, yeah, it's a constant reminder.
It's part of you. Yeah.
It's part of my connection to God. It's part of my purpose in life. And it's a reminder that there's no time in my life that I am that I'm the boss, that I am God. There's always a presence above me.
Rifka's sitting here. What kind of host is this? He's asking if he needs the house.
You can ask. You can ask whatever you want.
Only because sometimes questions, you're running around.
Questions are good. Questions are good.
All right. We're going to take a 30-second break. Okay. I got to regroup right now. Be right back with the Lubins, Rabbi Lubin and his daughter, Rifka.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. I'm with the rabbi and his daughter, Rifka, and I'm trying to regroup from my question about you always have your yarmulke no matter where you go. Of course you do. My apologies, Rabbi, and to Rifka. So I want to talk about some other things that I was just, you know, getting ready for the show. I like to research a little bit, you know, the power of Google and just obviously researching. Hopefully the audience enjoys it. I read that you've been in Fort Dix Federal Penitentiary.
I spent the Rosh Hashanah as a rabbinical student. I was 19 years old. I spent the high holidays in Fort Dix Federal Penitentiary.
Yeah, luckily you were not an inmate. So I want to clarify
What was that like? So you know, on a lighter note, it was the first time I ever led high holiday services. And the concern when you're a rabbi leading high holiday services is that if people get tired or they get bored, they're going to walk out on you. I didn't have to worry about that. We literally had a captive audience. But it was a very humbling experience. It was a very, very humbling experience. We were three rabbinical students. We brought a Torah scroll for the holidays. There were, you know, a group of inmates there. It's one of the largest federal prisons in the country. It's right here in New Jersey. Most people don't really know anything about it. They think Fort Dix. They think, you know, the Air Force Base. They think of the military. You know, we met a lot of people, a lot of real people. Just my own two cents, if young adults had an opportunity to just walk through a prison, whether it's county, I spend time visiting people in county, a state prison or a federal, it's a wake-up call. It's a real wake-up call that, you know, you're going to play games, you're going to get into trouble. It's just not worth it. But we met a lot of real people, holiday time, thinking about their families, talking about their families, and walking out. The first night of Rosh Hashanah was the first night of the high holidays. So after services, we were walking back towards the main entrance, and one of the guys was walking with us, and you know, he was a young father, had a couple of kids at home, and it's the holidays, and he looked at us, he said, you know, boy, I would give anything to be able to walk out with you tonight. And you know, we said goodnight, we'll see you in the morning. And I walked out, and we were staying at a little motel a half mile away, and I was 19, and it struck me that I'm free. I can go right, I can go left, I can do whatever I want right now. And there are a lot of people in this country that don't have that freedom that we take for granted. I mean, Memorial Day was this past Monday. I gave an invocation in Parsippany at the Memorial Day parade. So many people gave so much, sacrificed so much for our freedom that we don't always even stop to appreciate, to realize that, hey, there are people in this world living under dictatorships and living under tyranny, and I'll Rifka will talk about some of that a little later. They don't have the opportunities to be free. So that was an eye-opening experience for me. It was a very, very positive experience. It was a very memorable experience.
Yeah, it sounds like the way you talk about it's like yesterday, you know, Rabbi? Yeah. No, that was just curious, you know.
Interesting cast of characters that were there also, you know.
Yeah, I could only imagine what
that's really,
like.
You can't really ask people. It's not proper etiquette to say, well, what are you here for? But you hope there's one guy in the crowd that likes to talk, and you know, kind of, hey, you know the French Connection, like he's the guy they're playing. Some interesting characters that we came across, who were there. But it was a very humbling experience.
Yeah, but you brought light to a very dark, you know, place where you're basically lifting up their souls and giving them also hope. You know, Rifka, one of the things that you know I love to be able to talk about is the wonderful younger people out there. You know, you're a lady now, you're not like a kid, but I'm, you know, and I don't mean that pejoratively, but, you know, part of the Chabad of Southeast Morris County, you have the Teen Visionaries and all these wonderful programs for the kids. I call them the kids. I mean, they're all people. But, you know, what's it like to be around other, like, peer groups where you're seeing other young kids doing amazing things?
It's very humbling, and it's just incredible that we have these teenagers out there who are going out making a difference. And it's not always so easy. Not everyone's doing it. It's not necessarily what the trend is, what the that is. But they're going out there and they're making a difference. And that's inspiring and it's encouraging. And it gives me the strength and it says, listen, like, we got this. We're going to go change the world.
Right. I mean, so what I was reading is that there's young kids in the community going out and feeding the hungry or just saying hello and going into an environment where, like, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to actually learn about this. Because once again, people are always like, oh, the kids are all screwed up. They're all mixed up. And I'm like, no, the kids are wonderful. You know, I don't care who you are. There's always going to be a bad egg, a bad apple. And that's life's mysteries. But, you know, I was so struck by the fact that part of the Chabad, they have the young kids, which is our future, doing these wonderful things. What about your perspective, Rabbi? Because, I mean, you know, you're the leader of the Chabad of Southeast Morris County.
Well, I think Rivka is doing good talking about it. Look, Rivka, tell them about the Babka Project.
What?
About your babkas and what you do with them, what you did with them.
So when
you
I
were
was
in high school.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I started getting into making babka.
What's no. a babka? I'm sorry.
Babka is,
what's a babka?
I'm sorry.
It's a traditional Jewish like delicacy. It's like a chocolate dough.
Oh.
Dough and chocolate. They're really good. I'll have to bring you one.
I gotta watch. You know, my boys go crazy. They're like, the people don't want to hear about your physique. You gotta work on the physique. No.
Type of cake. It's like a Danish.
All right.
Made into
sounds
a cake.
Like a tasty
yeah.
treat.
Yeah.
So tell us more about this.
So I started getting into, I enjoyed being in the kitchen. So I started baking and I would just go out and start giving them out. And we had the teens come together and we baked them. And it was right around Thanksgiving time. We had the teens come to Chabad and they were packing the dinners and we all sat down and we all made 2-3 babkas together. And, you know, one people brought home to their family so they could have it at their Thanksgiving dinner. Another one to give to somebody else. And we just kept on doing that, just kept on baking babkas and just kept on giving them out and spreading some light, spreading some warmth. We did this over COVID. You know, Friday afternoon, I'd hop in the car with some babka or any other baked goods and just think like, okay, who in the community can just use a surprise? You know, who can we go over to and just add a little light to their week?
That's beautiful. I mean, you know, I know about latkes, kind of rhymes right. with babka, but so that's a wonderful thing, though. And let's talk about Thanksgiving, because I know how important it is for the Chabad. I mean, you're feeding the hungry, you know, Rabbi, you and your wonderful family and everybody involved in the Chabad, some wonderful volunteers. I read you've already provided 20,000 Thanksgiving dinners. You
know? So Thanksgiving is really kind of where we started our humanitarian work all these years ago. We did a Seder at a low-income housing complex right around the corner from my synagogue. And it went great. And they called us up and they said, could you help us Thanksgiving? There were a couple of shut-ins. You know, every town has low-income housing. And every low-income housing complex, most people, they have family. They get around. They're doing okay. There are people that are just isolated for whatever reason. They're just alone. They're shut-ins. They don't go out. It's not so much, just to correct you a little, it's not so much that we're feeding the hungry. We're feeding the lonely. And, you know, most people aren't starving in our country today, thankfully. But a lot of people are isolated and alone. So what I found all these years ago is that there are plenty of places you can get that will distribute turkeys. And they'll distribute supplies. These people don't cook. You give them a turkey, they don't cook. They're doing TV dinners. They got a microwave. They got a toaster oven. They don't cook. And there are plenty of places you can go and have a Thanksgiving dinner. They don't go anywhere. So we started going to these individuals, and it's a whole logistical process of dealing with these places and bringing them a ready-to-eat catered Thanksgiving dinner to their door on Thanksgiving Day. That's the other thing. You know, walking the walk when it comes to charity doesn't just mean doing it at my convenience. I get calls in the middle of the night. I'll do things. You know, it's a hot Thanksgiving. It's a day people are spending with their families. We're distributing thousands of dinners delivered on Thanksgiving Day because you can't do it the day before. You can't do it the day after. Do it on Thanksgiving Day to people that are just isolated and alone. Otherwise, they'd be eating tuna fish. They'd be eating whatever. And they're so grateful and they're so appreciative. And it's great. And it's funny because we have a lot of supporters of our organization. They believe in our cause. They love what we do. They financially support us, but they don't have time to do this every day. Thanksgiving, I encourage them, come yourself, bring your kids, bring your grandkids, and many of them do. And they go and deliver them and talk about inspiring the younger generation to give. That's how you do it. You take them with you. You show them how good it feels to give. I was talking to someone Friday, and anyone here that's watching or listening, I encourage you to do this. If you're at all philanthropic, listen to this idea. Tell me this isn't genius. And you have a foundation as well. If you support any charitable cause, before the end of the year, take a certain amount of money and give it to each of your kids and each of your grandkids and tell them you've allocated this amount of funds for them to distribute this year to a charity of their choice.
Powerful.
It's as simple as that. It could be $1,000 a kid. It could be $100 a grandkid. Whatever it is, let them figure it out. Because if you take a five-year-old kid, they could be 5 years old, and say, Grandpa, Grandma's going to give you $100. You need to give it to charity. Now they need to have conversations of where they want it to go. Do they want it to go to poor people? Do they want it to go to a religious cause? Do they want it to go to an animal? Whatever it is, they could divide it up. They could do it all together. But all of a sudden, you're generating thought process of giving, and most significantly, they start feeling good. They get the feeling. Someone once told me, they said, Rabbi, I never really got into charity. I've never developed a taste for it. Those were their exact words. And I said, I feel so sorry for you. Because you don't know how good it feels to give to other people. When I say give, it could be money, it could be time, it could be resources, it could be whatever it is. But it's our obligation, talk about parenting or grandparenting or anyone we have an influence on, to give these children the opportunity to learn how good it feels to help others. I think a lot of people don't do it simply because they never experienced the power.
Incredible. I love the idea. You know,
it's so simple.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
Here's money, you give it away.
It's a wonderful idea, especially at a young age, to start that thought process so people aren't just worried about themselves.
Right. And so, if they're a little older, match it. I'll give you something, why don't you match it and give it to whatever cause you want, and then things go from there.
That's why I'm so happy to have you on the journey of giving back, and you're talking about ideas to give back and to lift up the world. Exactly. So, Rivka, you know, I've been waiting a while. I've got to start asking you about, you know, your trip to the Ukraine. So, you know, for the listeners, tell us a little bit about, you know, the fact that I understand you went to Berlin like five or six times, and then you were in the Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
Odessa.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about that. Tell us about, you know, what motivated you to go from Morris County, New Jersey, right into the Ukraine, Odessa, which is incredibly dangerous. Why?
So I'll give some background.
Please.
So last year I was studying in Israel, a year abroad, and it was Passover time, and I knew that I wanted to, you know, I've been so blessed to grow up where this is just how we live our lives. And it's the most empowering feeling because, you know, it's not like I learned that it's not limited to just Morris County, just the nursing home. It's I got these tools for life that I'm able to go into the world and wherever I am, be able to be that light and to share that kindness, et cetera. So I was looking to make a difference, Passover, instead of coming back home. And long story, my dad is friends with the rabbi in Odessa, and he, you know, there was the war already, and they had evacuated their orphanage and mothers and children to Berlin, to Germany, from Odessa. So my dad reached out to the rabbi and said, how can we help? He said, I have a daughter who, you know, she's looking to do something over Passover break, make a difference. Can I send you her? Can she go help? He said, sure. So next thing I knew, I ended up in Berlin with my friend. We're two Americans. We speak maybe five words, not even, in Russian. We land in a refugee hotel in Germany. And this is in March, I think. So, you know, it's 4 weeks since the war began. 4 weeks these people have been here. And where these two American kids land in a place where these people just escaped the war. We have teenagers. There's kids our own age. And they're broken, you know. They just left everything they knew, their lives they knew. They're 18. Everything they knew, like, one day was just gone. And now they're in a new country. There's a new language. There's so much changes. And here they are. And we looked at each other. We had no plan. We just knew we were going to Germany, and we're going to figure it out once we get there. And so we looked at each other. We're like, okay, let's get to work. So we got to work. We went to the stores. We bought a bunch of things. We noticed the girls were very artistic. We bought journals. No, they're called, there's these things called bullet journals, where it's basically blank notebooks with dots. And why we bought them was because we realized that this was a space for them to be able to express themselves and express their individuality, because there's not, you know, they're able to just do what they wanted to do. And that was just so important because, you know, they didn't have too many opportunities here to be able to express themselves and express who they actually are. And we just program after program, just looking around, seeing what they needed and trying to cater to that. We took them on a trip to Leipzig in Germany to an amusement park. When we told the people who were running the hotel, we're like, we want to take them on a trip. They're like, you guys are crazy. We're like, we know, but we're like, we're going to do it. You know, it's important. And it was the first time these teenagers, you know, as we like pulled out from the hotel, everyone like just gave a deep breath. And that was like the breath they'd been holding in since they boarded those buses in Odessa. Finally, they were just able to relax. They were being able to be a kid again, go on the rides, just be able to have that little bit of sense of freedom. And I was there for 3.5 weeks over Passover. It was incredible. And, you know, we just language disappeared. You know, when you have that connection, you're doing good. You know, we spoke that common language, a common language of love. And after that trip, we went back to Israel. We finished our studies there. And I knew it was just the beginning. Just the beginning. I went back again in the summer, went back for the high holidays, went back for Hanukkah. And after just recently, a couple months ago, they returned back home to Odessa. And yeah, so I knew that, I mean, you can't just stop, you know. I couldn't just stop what I was doing. They still need help. There's still so much, even though thank God now they're home, you know, there's a lot, so still so much we need to do and we can do. So I spoke to my parents and I said, can I go to Ukraine for Passover?
Well, hold on. I got to hold on. This is like, Rabbi, this is like, how to ask me. I, what's going through your mind when your daughter is doing unbelievable, beautiful things, lifting up folks, you know, in another part of the world, and now she's going to go right into, which everybody realizes how incredibly dangerous. What's going through your mind?
So up until that point, it was all just a tremendous amount of pride. And, you know, she was raising thousands of dollars and going each time she went with 6 duffel bags filled with all sorts of candies and all sorts of activities. And they had dancing every night in the hall. I'm telling everyone about this and I'm helping her raise funds. And everything's amazing. It's wonderful. Rivka's the best. She's great. And the work she's doing is so wonderful. Then in March, she comes to me and says, okay, I want to go to Ukraine for Passover. And I said, no. I said, no, there's a war going on. You can't go to Ukraine for Passover. She said, no, I really want to go. The girls need, I know them. They need me. I want to bring them joy and happiness. And I said, no, you can go somewhere else. There's a big world out there. Go anywhere you want. And then she checkmated me. And she said, I think you should ask your rabbi. Now, when you're a rabbi, every rabbi has a rabbi. And when you grow up as the daughter of a rabbi, you know that. And she said, you know what? You know, you're answering as a father, but there's a different element here. There's the greater good involved. And I spoke it over with my rabbi, who you know, is hands-on and what's going on there. And it's not the dangerous part of Ukraine, relatively speaking. It's not the active war zone there. And the staff that's there and the rabbis that are there are responsible. And after a lot of thought, I talked it over with my wife, and we said, you know what? It boils down to this, Todd. You can't raise a child to care deeply about other people and then say, well, that was only when it's convenient. You know, but if it's going to be risky, then you just have to stop. I mean, look at Memorial Day. How many people are patriotic? But, well, I don't want to go fight. I don't want to go risk my life. You know, if you really believe in something, you can't stop just because there's an element of danger. And that ultimately is why we let her go. We were concerned. We were worried. But we understood that if you raise a child to believe in helping people, they're going to do it when it's not always so pleasant and it's not always so much fun. And for all the accolades we get and as good as it feels to give to others, it doesn't always. sometimes people aren't appreciative of your efforts, and sometimes people are nasty, and sometimes you bring them a dinner and they slam the door in your face. And it's not just about me. It's about doing what's right and doing what needs to happen. So ultimately, yeah, so that's why we let her go. Well, she's 19. Yeah. She can do whatever she wants. Yeah,
I spoke to your rabbi, but I can only imagine. So, Rivka, you know, you went to Odessa. Now, when you land, what's going through your mind?
Well, first we landed in Istanbul from Newark. Then it was a long journey. Then we went to Kishinev. We flew to Kishinev in Moldova. Then from Moldova, you have to go to the border in Ukraine. It's a whole process. Eventually, many hours later, you end up in Odessa. It's a process, and it was surreal. And I think it was like my dad was saying, you know, it wasn't the easiest thing. It was difficult throughout the journey. There was a lot of things, but we knew we're doing the right thing, and we knew that they needed us, and that is why we went. And we knew that we weren't sure what we were going to expect, just like when we ended up in the refugee hotel, but we knew that we were going to look around and we're going to say, how can we make a difference? What do they need? And we're going to give to them, we're going to be there, and we're just going to smile and make sure everyone has a good time.
And how were you received by the folks in Odessa when they actually said, oh my God, Rivka's here? What was that reaction?
They were excited, and thank God we've built a connection and relationship, and they're like, of course Rivka's here. You know, we just kept on coming back and coming back and coming back, and that gave them hope, and they knew we were there. They knew everything was going to be okay. They knew there was going to be candy. They knew there was going to be programs. They knew they were going to have a happy Passover, and despite the circumstances, despite curfews, despite barriers, despite military checkpoints, everything was going to be good.
It's an incredible story, and that's why, once again, it's a great honor that you're here, too, to tell the audience, people, about your personal journey, because a lot of young kids say they want to do something, but you actually not only did it, but, you know, you're giving your heart and soul to lift up the world and put a lot of light in a very dark time in world history. Rabbi, I got to segue a little bit on a very serious note, too, is the rise of a lot of hate in our country and the world. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't just explore a little bit with you, you know, your perspective on it. And why do you think, just it seems more and more, there's a lot of hate groups out there. Well, what's going on?
I think there's always been hatred. You know, hatred's been around for a very long time. Go back to the beginning of time, there's always been groups hating each other. A lot of it stems from jealousy. A lot of it stems from just a callous disregard of other humanity and other people, looking at others as less than. It's always been around. I think in a way there's less of it today than there was a generation ago. I think it used to be institutionalized, where there was, you know, hatred was an accepted norm in our society. Today, most of the world looks down at hate groups. You'd hope there are some fringe elements that are looking up to them. But yeah, in the last couple of years, it's almost become more accepted to be outwardly critical of other people, particularly anti-Semitism, which has gone up dramatically, and anti-Israel hatred, which is somehow still acceptable in a world where most other forms of bigotry and intolerance are not. I experience it. I experienced it firsthand. I walk down the street basically with a sign that says Jewish. I got my yarmulke, I got my beard, I got my tzitzis, I got my fringes right over here, and people know that I'm Jewish. And I have I've experienced anti-Semitism on a regular basis. I mean, people are surprised. Like, I get stuff yelled at me out of car windows. I get stuff thrown at me, dirty Jew, Heil Hitler, in front of my kids, with my kids, you know, cursing. Rivka's experienced it with me, walking to shul, walking to the synagogue Saturday morning in Morris County. Like, people do stuff like that. It's not every week, thank God, but it's not rare enough to be considered unbelievable. It's like, oh yeah, it's happening again. So is it a problem? It is a problem. Am I concerned about it? I am. But you know, it's funny, at the gala we had last week, one of the Morris County commissioners was there, and she was talking to me about this and the rise of anti-Semitism, and it's concerning, and it is, but I don't live my life as an anti-Semite. I don't wake up in the morning saying, how can I fight anti-Semitism today? I believe the greatest antidote to anti-Semitism is Jewish pride. So I live my life proud of my Jewish identity. I'm not ashamed to look different. I'm not ashamed to be different. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable sharing my message. And that ultimately, like Rivka's analogy of light and darkness, ultimately pride in one's faith and being comfortable in one's own skin. We've gotten so uncomfortable in this country. We've gotten so ashamed of expressing faith and just being proud of our religious heritage, whatever faith it may be. Just be comfortable in your own skin. And ultimately, if we are, then a lot of that bigotry and hatred goes away. You can't spend your life worrying about someone out there that doesn't like you.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You got to run your own race. But we live in a world, unfortunately, where there are some folks out there that are just, you know, totally disrespectful. And it creates this environment, which is dangerous and it's very divisive. And obviously, I bring people on to kind of talk about a problem and then try to figure out solutions. Rivka, what's your perspective on this, too? Because, I mean, obviously, you're growing up and you love your parents and you're everybody you're involved with, the Chabad, and you're out and about. What's your perspective on that?
You know, like my dad said, the best thing is Jewish pride, and we fight it with light. You know, every week now, over the last couple of months, I'm living in Brooklyn now. And so I go out with these little elementary school kids. We go to Prospect Park, Barclays Center, whatever it may be. And we go out Friday afternoon with candles for Shabbat. And we go out and we look for Jewish women and girls to share that light. To, you know, we're proud of who we are. We have that Jewish pride and we meet Jewish women and all the time, many women a week. And we give them those candles and we're spreading that light. And we're like, we're proud of who we are. And this is who we are. Nothing to be ashamed of. And, you know, giving people that sense of Jewish pride is the best thing. You know, I was in camp in Guatemala in the summer, going to Kazakhstan this summer, wherever I've been, San Antonio, New Mexico.
Just casually screw that in, you know.
My kids, like
she's going to Vermont. You don't go to Kazakhstan.
And I was like, are you going to come to Florida? I'm like, I don't fly domestic. I've only flown international in the past 2 years. But wherever I go, you know, we have this song we teach the kids, you know, I'm a proud Jew, I'm a Jew and I'm proud, and I'll sing it out loud, because forever and ever, that's who I am. And that's something, you know, we're spreading, you know, whether it's the women in Prospect Park with lighting the Shabbat candles or the kids all over the world, we're spreading that message of Jewish pride. This is who we are and this is how we fight the darkness.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, Rivka, once again, you know, you're just an awesome young lady. And just the way you're living your life, it's a great example, a shining example of really the goodness in people. And that's incredible. So, you know, Rabbi, you know, when I bring folks on, I always want to give them an opportunity to, you know, hopefully inspire and motivate folks to do whatever their calling is in life.
Right.
Doesn't matter what your religion is. My religion is I want to try to treat everybody fairly, equally, with respect, because I think that's the most important. These people should be respected. They could look different. Doesn't matter. You know, like I try to raise my young boys. You can't judge a book by its cover. And this is one of the things, right, where people don't understand each other. They refuse to understand who these people are because you look at someone, they look different, they must be different, but everybody's really the same. What's your perspective for the listeners on advice about giving back, sharing, and caring?
Conceptually or practically?
Well, more on a practical level, you know, just something, you know, maybe the listeners can think about today and as they go through their lives.
So I'll tell you something interesting. I mentioned this at the gala. You know, very often when people we know go through hard times, whatever those challenges are, they lose a loved one or they lose a job or whatever it is, we say to them, you know, if there's anything I could do for you, please let me know. I'm here for you in any way I can be. Let me know how I could be there for you. And if you've ever been on the receiving end of those words, it's very nice to hear. But we never take people up on that. You'll never call someone up and say, remember a month ago I was going through a hard time and, you know, you kind of said you'll do, well, actually, there's something you can do for me now. And we never do that. Because while it's meant sincerely, it's just not touching home. And if we go the extra step, and we say, we think of something we could actually do for someone. I tell you, someone's in the hospital, well, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know. Call them when you're at ShopRite. Say, hey, I'm in ShopRite. Could I pick anything up for you? Then they'll tell you, oh, yeah, that would be very helpful. If we take one step further in our minds and think, what could we actually do to help somebody? Not how can I help? How can I help? There are a million things I could do to help people. But practically speaking, think of one person in our life and then think of one thing you could actually do practically to help them. That's changing the world, but that's actually making it real. It's not just, oh, I'd love to make a difference in this world. We all know someone that could use a favor, a hand, a something. So spend an hour with them, spend a little time with them, and just think about what we could practically do to make a difference in the world. My dad said at my bar mitzvah many years ago, he says, you know, two questions every person has to ask themselves. One is, what can I do to make the world better? And the second one is, what am I doing? You know, it's nice to ask you, oh, what can I do? I could do this. I could, oh, there's so many opportunities to make a difference in this world. But what am I doing? And if I'm not doing enough, if I could do a little more, then let's try to make that practical and say, how can I make a difference? And it's not that hard. It's not that hard if we only care enough. You mentioned, and this, I think, is what all giving boils down to. We're all God's children. We're all God's children. You can't hate your own family members if you view them as family members. And if our family members are in need of any background, anywhere they are, then we try to help our own family. We're all in this together. You know, the threats facing global humanity put us all in the same boat. So if we're all in this together and we're all God's children, then let's help each other make the world better.
No doubt about it, Rabbi. And God bless you. And Rivka, you're so incredible. I mean, to both of you, the Chabad of Southeast Morris County is incredible. You folks are incredible. You know, it's really just been a humbling experience to have you both on today to take time out of your busy schedule. And I love the idea of unity and togetherness. That's what this show's about, of the journey of giving back, bringing the world together. You can change one life and change the entire world. Never forget that, as the Rabbi and Rivka is talking about, togetherness, unity. Be a light unto the others, okay? God bless everyone. Please tune in next Sunday. Take care.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.